Hello, this is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. You're listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. We appreciate your time. We've got baseball season starting this week. The Shockers are at Louisiana Tech on Friday. They start a weekend series. We have two members of the pitching staff, Spencer Hines and Connor Holden, to get us started. Spencer is a senior lefty. He is from Weatherford, Texas. He is in his second season with the Shockers. After transferring from Houston, Connor is a graduate transfer from Murray State. He's in his first season at Wichita State. He is from Louisville, Kentucky. All right, we are recording this in the, what do they call this, the classroom here in the X Stadium baseball complex. We've got eight different baseball jersey tops behind us. You guys were talking about that. What's your favorite, and how do you go about deciding who, what do you wear, when?
I like the all black look a lot. It's just real slick, and they got the black pants last year. So that was a nice little reveal, but that's my personal favorite. The creams on Sunday are usually pretty nice.
The cream, and that's the one with kind of the Old West Shockers across the the chest. Connor, do you have a preference?
Well, I can't wait to wear the pinstripes because that was my favorite uniform at my previous school. So I can't wait to wear that, and then I'll be interested to see if it's the starters who pick the uniforms, wear, if it's Coach Wedge.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. At one point, it was the starting pitcher who got to pick. How do they do it here?
Last year, they just kind of threw something. Like, I guess Wedge came up with it. I don't know. We'd show up and it'd be on the practice plan or the pregame plan. We'd have our uniforms listed.
So we've got the pinstripe. We've got one yellow. We've got one camo. We've got two black, one cream, one gray, and one white. Okay, if you follow college baseball social media at all, you know gear is a big thing. They got to celebrate it when it rolls in. They got to show it in the locker rooms, all that kind of stuff. I know a lot of that is just for recruiting purposes, to say, hey, here's what we've got if you come to our school. How big a deal is that to, you know, your average high school senior or junior when they're starting to make their decisions?
Well, I think I can talk on this because I got recruited last year to come here. Gear's big, really big, and I remember every school that I talked to, I was like, hey, what am I going to get? Like, what is going to happen? I've gotten more gear this year than I did all 4 years combined at my previous school. So I'm extremely happy. I mean, I'm wearing something right now that I got, and it's nice because I get to wear it out, because usually the gear is strictly for baseball, but here you get so much of it that – you get to, like, wear it with pride in the community and go out and people see that, and I really appreciate that aspect of it.
Spencer, what's your view on gear and its role in the whole college baseball recruiting world?
I think it's really important, and, you know, it's really taken over the last probably 10 years or so. You know, when I was in junior college going through the recruitment process, I was definitely pretty interested in what the gear was, and, you know, they kind of lay it out for you on your visit and stuff. They'll have a whole room of, you know, this is what you'll get. And so I think a lot of kids definitely rely on that when it comes to recruiting and making a decision on a school.
Is it like top three in your decision tree, or is it top 10? Does that just depend on the kid and the school?
When I was in junior college, it was probably like top five. But when I was in the transfer portal, I had been at Houston and gotten a lot of gear. So I was kind of just like, you know, I want a place where I can play. I guess once you get older, you might start to, I'm not lose interest in it necessarily, but you're kind of like, okay, this is going to come with wherever I go.
Different things become important.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted it to be in my top three, but then my mom humbled me and said, at the end of the day, the gear really doesn't matter. But I know out of high school, I think the big thing was, because you have all different friends going playing different places, that you almost get to show it off to your friends, like, hey, this is what I got. And so I think with the social media growing so much that if your program isn't focused on getting an image out there of, hey, like, this is what you're going to look like, I don't think they're taking advantage of the social media, because kids share it, and it's a big, big thing coming up in the next generation.
You can always count on moms to bring you down to earth. What do you do with the old gear when you transfer? Do you just put it away and say, I'll wear it in 10 years, or do you donate it?
All my Houston stuff is back home. just hanging in my closet. I don't know. I kind of want to have it for keepsake, but, you know, who knows? I might donate it sometime in the future. But I think it'd be cool to keep around, you know, to show my kid or something like that when I'm older.
Sure.
I know I have some stuff. I kept some stuff, and then I also gave some stuff away to some of my friends that still go to Murray. And I know trading is a big thing, too. So, like, when I went to summer ball, I took gear with me. And then when you go play with guys from Wright State or other Creighton or some other schools, you can trade gear. So then when you come back, you go, hey, I have shirts from all over. And it's kind of like a little remembrance.
Yeah, don't wear Creighton gear around here.
No.
That would be, no, that'd be, no. Your Murray State would be fine, but not Creighton gear. Spencer, if you weren't playing baseball, what sport would you be involved
in? You know, I liked football a lot in high school, but one thing that I always get mad at my parents about is not letting me get into pro rodeo, because that's kind of what my dad did. And me and my brother were always kind of like, man, like, we think rodeo is so cool. Like, why didn't y'all ever give us a chance? And they just didn't really want us to live that rough lifestyle. So I've always thought it'd be cool to be a cowboy and be on the circuit and whatnot. But realistically, probably football is probably what I would have chosen to do.
Rodeo, that's interesting. What event would you have leaned to, do you know?
With my body type, probably would have been a steer wrestler. I'm a little big to do any rough stock.
I watch Yellowstone, so I know rodeo is a rough life. So yeah. You probably made the right choice. Connor, how about you? Is there another sport that would have grabbed you?
You know, I played football 1 year. I'm a big body. It didn't work out for me. I didn't have the right stuff to do it. I am actually a volleyball player at heart. Like, I love volleyball. So I think it hurts because I can't really jump that well. But if I could jump, I would definitely play volleyball.
Wow. Did you play volleyball club, high school, anything like that?
I did. So my freshman year, I got cut from the high school team. So I didn't play freshman year baseball. And then in turn, I played volleyball my freshman year. I went to an all-guy high school, and so then we had a volleyball team, so I got to play volleyball my freshman year.
Interesting. What position did you play?
I was middle.
Okay.
Yeah, so I liked it, but then once the next year I tried out again and made the team, then I focused on baseball.
You switched to baseball. Yeah. Interesting. Volleyball and rodeo, I did not expect either of those answers. All right, take us inside the locker room. Super Bowl was last night. I'm imagining there is a big Chiefs dynamic in the locker room. What's kind of the NFL debate arguments that go on in Shocker baseball?
Well, you know, the local guys and the KC guys, mainly just the Midwest guys in general, they're all giant Chiefs fans. So it's kind of like they have their little circle. And then we have the Texas guys, who a lot of them are Cowboys fans. So it's like, honestly, everybody clashes for the Cowboys against the Cowboys. I'm a Cowboys fan, and I catch heat for it all the time, but it's kind of like that. And then everybody else who's, you know, against both of those teams.
I think that's the big key word there is against, because they're so passionate for their teams that everyone else is just like, whoever they're playing, I hope they beat them.
Who is the most passionate / obnoxious Chiefs fan in the locker room?
Chuck Ingram.
Probably Chuck Ingram, yeah. Andrew Stewart's a close second, but.
Yeah, they are.
Chuck is way more outright about it.
We get the little theme song playing in the locker room whenever they won the cheat. The whole time before practice, it was playing. Just Chuck's going crazy.
All right. Connor, so you've had an interesting journey as an NFL fan. Take us through your steps to get where you are now.
So I was born in Cincinnati, grew up in Northern Kentucky. So I was originally a Bengals fan, still a Cincinnati Reds fan. But my parents moved to Pittsburgh before I was born, and they lived there for 6 years. And while they were there, they won the Super, or they got to the playoffs and I think the Super Bowl like twice when they were there. And my parents were like, "This is what winning feels like," because the Bengals historically have been bad. So then when they came back, they became Steelers fans. And then I have two cousins in the NFL, so then that changed to starting to support them. So I had one cousin play for the Philadelphia Eagles, so I was an Eagles fan for 11 years. And then his brother, my other cousin, played for the 49ers, so we we would be going to 49ers games. We'd be going to Eagles games to go support them. So it's been a little, I'd almost say like bandwagon, where I just kind of hop from team to team, and now it's trying to figure out who I want to support.
Well, those are good reasons. Give us the names of your cousins who played in the NFL.
The one that played for the Philadelphia Eagles, his name is Brent Celek. And then his brother's name is Garrett Celek.
Okay. Exciting stuff.
Brent Celek?
Yeah.
Do you have a pitcher that you regard as a role model? Spencer, you can start with that one.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I know I'm not right-handed, but I really love watching Walker Buehler. I just I like the way he goes about his work. He's really smart, and his delivery is just really sound.
And he pitches for the Dodgers, correct?
Yes. Yeah, he's a Dodgers guy. I also, if I had to pick a lefty, I'd probably pick another Dodger, Julio Urias. I think he's just kind of like a bulldog out there, and he's, you know, I feel like the odds have been against him his whole life. You know, he grew up in Mexico and whatnot, and he just really gets after it and competes with what he's got.
So when you're a lefty and you're watching right-handers pitch, is it the same thing at all? Are there things you can pick up, or is it so different that you don't?
Lefties are going to throw different off-speed pitches more often than righties. But, I mean, it kind of just depends. It's different guy to guy. So, like, you know, both Buehler and Urias are going to throw a lot of breaking balls just because they have really good breaking balls. But, you know, if you watch a guy like Cliff Lee or something, you know, he was a changeup lefty because he had really good changeup and whatnot. So, I don't know. It's all the same movement, and you can pick things out of pitch sequences. You just got to keep in mind that, you know, your out pitch might be something else than what their out pitch is on TV or whatever.
Connor, how about you? Do you have a role model?
I would say there's like two people for two different reasons. Was being a Reds fan, Sonny Gray. I appreciate how he excelled at the Athletics and then got traded to a big market team to the Yankees. And he struggled. And then the Reds got him, and he excelled again. So it's one of those things where even if you do have problems and you're not your best, he still fought through it, and he's still – and now he's, I mean, the Reds ace, basically, leading the team. So him, I like his perseverance. And then Joe Kelly for the Dodgers, too, because – he sticks to who he is, and I'm a big, in the bullpen, big off-speed guy, and throw a lot of them, and he, I think he throws, it was like 75% off-speed, and like the hitters know that, but he sticks to what he's good at, and I appreciate that, so I try to follow that.
So Shockers get started this weekend, like we said, at Louisiana Tech. Will be a challenging series for the Shockers, so let's give people some insight into, we had a bunch of practices in the fall, you had scrimmages, you've had spring to look at some of your teammates. Give the people a hitter or two who really impressed you, somebody that maybe gave you some problems and you're looking for big things.
I will I'll start off by saying a name that you guys will be familiar with is Xavier Casarilla. He is going to be a household name here over the next 3 years.
Xavier is a freshman third baseman.
Yes, freshman. He actually got drafted this last year, but decided to come here. And he is the most complete freshman hitter I've ever seen throughout my whole college experience. His approach at the plate and his ability to handle off-speed pitches at this level for such a young age is like I've never seen before. And I think he's going to have a very, very good year this year.
Spencer, who jumped out at you?
You know, I think our lineup compared to last year is going to be, there's going to be a lot more tough decisions to make. Cause we have, you know, probably 10 or 12 guys that could really start for us. But I think aside from, you know, Ross Cadena and Garrett Kosas, you know, the veteran guys, Chuck Ingram came back with some crazy pop. He played a little bit last year, hit a few homers for us, but, his bat's really come along, and I think that we had a couple of JUCO guys like Brock Rodden. He's a switch hitter, middle infielder. He's got some juice from both sides of the plate. And then Sawyer Thornhill can absolutely punish a fastball. So I think all those guys are going to make some noise this year.
And Sawyer is also a middle infielder. Am I correct to say
correct,
that?
Yes.
Yeah, second base shortstop. Okay, so Connor, you said Xavier, his approach at the plate, which is something I think fans hear a lot. What does that mean?
So, especially for someone as young as he is, he's extremely good, and he's already learned that you can't go up there and just sit fastball the whole time, because he is a very good hitter. Even when I'm pitching him, sometimes I don't even throw him fastballs. But he's realized and kind of matured that, okay, certain pitchers might not throw fastball, so I can't just sit fastball. So he's started to some counts start to sit off speed and just be okay with taking the single. You don't have to try to do too much. But I think with that aspect of it, of kind of seeing how the pitcher's going to pitch him and not just be stuck in one approach, he kind of changes. Like, we had a conversation yesterday about our at-bat that we had, and he told me that he switched his approach 3 times during the at-bat. He was sitting fastball during the early part of the counts, and then later in the count, he started sitting off-speed. And I think someone that young to be able to do that, because it's very hard to do, is super impressive.
So how often do pitchers talk to hitters, kind of talk hitting, to try to pick their brains and figure out something that will help you? How often does that go on?
I do it all the time after I throw an inner squat or something. Also, on the last question, I forgot to mention Peyton Tully. The guy can absolutely mash.
Yeah, we heard a lot about him in the fall.
Huge guy. When he gets a hold of one, it's
massive human being.
It's not going to come down for a while. But
and he will pitch and play first base or DH from what I understand,
yes,
right?
Yeah, he's a very good pitcher, too.
Yeah. But, yeah, going back to talking with hitters, I always try to, you know, kind of get a feel for, you know, what they might have been thinking, or, like, say I threw a pitch and I might ask them, like, hey, did that set up, you know, another pitch later in the at-bat or whatever it might be, or, like, hey, once I threw that pitch, like, did it have you looking somewhere else or whatever? So it's kind of good to be mindful about what a hitter's thinking up there, so that way you can use it to your advantage in the game.
I think it's nice also that we can ask them, hey, what did you see? Like, because a big thing with us is, did you see it out of my hand? Because a big part of pitching is deception. So especially with our changeups, especially as a really good changeup, but it's, I'll go ask the hitter afterwards. I'm like, hey, did you see the changeup out of my hand right away? Or did you see fastball and then adjust? And I think that's a big thing that you can ask too, is like, hey, did you see that pitch out of my hand? Because if they're seeing it, well, okay, then maybe I need to change something. Or I need to throw a better pitch.
So you two would be two of the more experienced guys on the pitching staff. Describe leadership roles, what you try to do to help other people along, especially the younger ones.
I'm kind of more of like a quiet leader in a sense. Like, you know, I'll help a guy if I can tell that they're swimming or whatever, like, you know, can't figure it out. But I try to just, you know, have the young guys watch me or maybe, you know, give them like little bits and pieces along the way if I can tell that they're struggling or whatever. But that's kind of what I do. Connor's a little.
I'm probably a little bit more vocal than Spencer. What I try to do with the leadership is, because we've gone through it, like, I've made the mistakes. And so I try to help them out, and because we've gone through it. And I think a lot of it is they're going to have to go through it, because that's how you learn. But it's, can we, like, make them go through it and have them understand what they did? Because that's the big thing, is make sure you know why it's happening. Like, what did you do wrong? And so that you can fix it yourself. You don't need someone to tell you. But we do have some great leaders on the team, with Ross and Kosis being the main two leading it. And then also Foster Gifford is a pitcher who's been around. He helps leading the guys also. So we, even though we are a young team, we do have that presence in the older guys of, hey, like, lead by example. I think that's a big thing here too, is not so much get in your face, rah, rah, like, do this. More is the older guys do what they're supposed to do, and then the younger guys watch and learn from that.
So So, Spencer, if you could go back and talk to the freshman version of Spencer Hines, what advice would you give yourself?
I would tell myself to not worry about 95% of the things that I worried about as a player. As I've gotten older, I've just come to realize that, you know, the more distractions you cause for yourself, the less your mind's going to be on, you know, executing the pitch or doing your job. That's kind of something that I would really get frustrated. I would get frustrated with, like, little things that really didn't matter in the grand scheme of it. So,
like what?
Oh, I don't know. Like, if I was pitching and I didn't have feel for a pitch, I would just, like, make a way bigger deal out of it than it actually was. Instead of just competing with what I had that day, I'd be like, man, I got to find this pitch. And it would kind of, like, it'd be in the back of your mind when you're out there and you're not really able to be yourself. So that's a small example, but.
Sure. Connor, how about you?
I would tell my younger self that if the only person you really need to believe in yourself is you, because that's through my career, I've tried to seek validation through others and, like, coach, tell me I'm good, do this. And I think at the end of the day, what I've learned is no matter what your stuff is that day, no matter if you're throwing hard, throwing slow, whatever you have, I think a big thing is if you believe in yourself, the pitch is going to – you're going to execute that better, way better than if you don't. And I know I struggled with that younger in my career, but I think the big thing is just – at least now that I've learned is I believe in myself 100%. No matter what happens, no matter if I didn't warm up, if I did warm up, that I go out there and just know that I'm going to put my best stuff out there. And at the end of the day, I can go to sleep knowing that I believe in myself and that I did my best.
So, Spencer, you've started games. You've come in as a reliever. Describe the difference in mental preparation, getting ready for those two different roles.
Relieving really simplifies it for me. Personally, you know, I love both of them. I don't really favor one over the other, but I know that when you're a reliever, you're kind of just thrown into the game. You don't really have time to have all this buildup of nerve and adrenaline and stuff. So it's really simple when you're in the bullpen. But as a starter, you know, you have your routine, your weekly routine. You have your bullpen every week. So, and from week to week, you know, you look back at your starts and you're like, okay, well, in this start, you know, I did this, so, like, I'm going to try to improve that next start or whatever it might be. So you got more days to sit and think on your past performances, so that can get to people. It got to me a little bit last year too. But I don't know. I mean, it's a lot different for sure, you know. It's way different having 5 to 7 days in between pitching than it is, you know, 1 to 2 maybe.
Connor, you've closed out a lot of games in your career, and people, I think, enjoy closers. They have a lot of them. They have the stereotype of kind of a, you know, special teams, wild man, real aggressive, heavy metal, playing out when they run out of the bullpen. What's your philosophy on being a closer?
I think my philosophy is just attack. I do think being a closer because those last three outs are the hardest outs to get in baseball because everyone's just so much more focused. You're getting 100% of everyone's focus. And one run in the first inning is a lot different than one run in the last inning. So my focus is just to attack because if I'm attacking, that's when I'm on my best stuff. I want to get out of the inning in 10 pitches or less. Strikeouts are great and everything, but I'd rather 3 ground outs, 5 pitches. Let's move on. But at the same time, you have to be able to control your breathing, and that's what learning from closing all those a long time is. You have to be rah-rah and hyped up and let's go, but at the same time, you have to be calm and under control. So it's almost like a controlled violence.
Do you have a favorite closer? I don't think you mentioned closers when we were talking earlier. Do you have somebody that you like their song, Trevor Hoffman, so, Hell's Bells, or anything like that?
My song... My walkout song is actually a closer's in the big leagues walkout song, same one. Edwin Diaz, I believe he's with the Mets now, I think. But he freshman year, I went out to Seattle, and I trained with Driveline out in Seattle my freshman year, and we lived out there. And he was the closer for Seattle, and we went to two or three games, and every game he closed, and all the lights were going on and off, big presentation fire, and it was his song, really, I got attached to, so... Ever since.
What's the name of the song?
It's Narco by Blaster Jacks. It's an EDM song with trumpets. So this year, I'm a big trumpet fan. So it gets me hype, and I think it'll be a fan favorite, hopefully.
All right. Looking forward to that. Jace Kaminska, starting pitcher, had just a fabulous freshman year. Spencer, you would have been around him all last year. Connor, you would have got a look at him this fall. Give us some insight into what made Jace such a good pitcher.
The dude is just a flat-out competitor, and you know, he's a winner. He's been doing this his whole life. Obviously, he's Gatorade Player of the Year his senior year in high school. So
twice.
Yeah, two-time Kansas Very Gatorade impressive. Player of the Year. You know, he just goes out and competes with what he's got. He doesn't really care what anybody thinks. He doesn't really care, you know, what's going to happen. He's like, I'm going to be myself, and... You know, he's gonna go out there and shove every time. I think our team last year was a little bit different every time we had Jace on the mound, for sure.
Yeah, no, he getting to know him, and he's a funny dude. He's super funny. And it's not, I don't even think he like tries to be funny. I think it's just who he is. But he's so relaxed and laid back that I think that helps everyone around him, because I even had this conversation with him. Because he's going to get a lot of pressure this year, being a preseason All-American, being our guy. But at the same time, it doesn't get to him, because he is so laid back. And I think whenever we're out there, we see him out there and he's laid back, everyone else kind of takes a deep breath. Hey, like, Jace is going to go do his thing and we're going to be successful.
That's kind of a big debate among fans, because you'll hear a lot about Friday night guys setting the tone for the weekend. Some people would say, well, that's nonsense, because somebody else has got to start on Saturday and things could change immediately. Other people will say, no, that's critical. Have you had that discussion, or where do you fall in that discussion? What does a Friday night guy do for you?
I mean, I think, you know, last year was a little different with four-game series, because you could always, you know, split the series and that'd be it. But with three games, it's like, if you're down that first game, you got to come back and win two. So, like, you're already kind of in a hole if you lose on Friday. But, yeah, I think the Friday guy is obviously probably the most important starter on the rotation, just because that first game of the series, like, you need it.
Yeah, we – Friday guy, you're getting their Friday guy too. You're getting their best. Best against best. And I think one thing this year that – I think we're going to really embody what Wedge talks about is presence, and that when we show up to the ballpark, we don't fear anyone. We're the ones that are feared. So I think this year especially, like when we show up Friday night to places, when we go down to La Tech, to a ranked place that's going to be a packed house, and we show up, that our presence and of we're here, this is our field. Like we're gonna do what we do, and I think Jace is going to excel at that and establishing, okay, we're here and we're gonna give you our best.
So, Connor, you would have some fresh eyes on Shocker baseball being a newcomer. What stood out to you about the way things work around here?
It's a lot more organized than my previous school, and I think that's also because we have a great staff, because Lauren Hibbs is amazing, and I think he's – a big part of why this program has success, being Wedge's right-hand man. And then also the fact that almost everyone who's in the staff has played here. Our strength coach played here. Head coach played here. Lauren played here. Pelfrey played here. I mean, our camera guy, Willie, played here. I mean, everyone around this program played here and decided to come back. And I think that's the big thing for me, is that they want this program to succeed. They're not here just for, like, a stepping stone to get to the next job. And I think that really resonated with me, that they want to make an impact here, and that's what I want to do.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you.